Welcome back. Over the weekend, U.S. and Iranian officials had their first face-to-face negotiations on a deal surrounding Tehran's nuclear development program. In a statement, the White House called the discussions very positive and constructive. Iranian state TV also declared that the two sides spoke face-to-face, and they're set to speak again on Saturday. Joining us to discuss is Michael Pregent, Middle East expert and a former intelligence officer. Good to have you with us, Michael.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
For sure. Now, during the talks, Special Envoy Steve Witkoff reportedly communicated to Iran's foreign minister that President Trump wanted him to resolve the two nations' differences through dialogue and diplomacy, if that's possible. How are they doing so far? What would you say of the outcome or progress on it?
Well, what I heard, the language I heard out of Tehran was they didn't want to negotiate with Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, because they think he's tough. They think he's strong. He would hold a stronger position and help and hold Tehran accountable. They wanted Witkoff. Now, Witkoff is the one that met with their foreign minister. Witkoff met with Putin. 2 days later, Putin attacks Sumy in Ukraine, killing 32 civilians. Witkoff worked on the Hamas negotiations, and that failed. There's no ceasefire in place. So they wanted Witkoff. And the language coming out of that meeting was the United States would be okay as long as Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. But what that means is they can enrich uranium. What that means is they can continue to work on their ballistic missile program. And what that also means is they can continue to support terrorism. And all of those things need to be off the table. We need strong negotiations here. And this opening salvo, I think, was very weak.
Yeah, as you pointed out, President Trump has said that the red line is the development of nuclear weapons, but there's little trust even on that point as to whether they are actually doing that already. And there's a lot of gray areas between, up to that point. So what do you think could be on the table in these negotiations?
We have all the leverage, and we continue to see that leverage for some reason. We have all the leverage. Their air defense systems protecting their nuclear sites have been taken out by the Israelis. They're vulnerable. They're under a maximum pressure sanctions campaign. So the president's special envoy should go in and say, listen, you need to disarm and stop supporting terrorism, or we are going to do the following. And the following would also be with the support of the Iranian people inside of Iran who are against the regime. Meaning we would target regime assets, target regime oil platforms, target regime military installations, and of course, target the regime's nuclear program. And the president was just asked about 15 minutes ago, would this mean that the U.S. would target Iran's nuclear facilities? And his response was absolutely. Absolutely if they don't make concessions. And from what I'm hearing so far, Iran has not been asked to make any concessions whatsoever by Witkoff.
So do you see that as a kind of timid negotiating strategy to not have to bomb their nuclear sites?
Well, if this is a good cop, bad cop strategy, I'm waiting for good cop to show up and I'm waiting for bad cop to show up because so far neither one has shown up when it comes to Witkoff. If the president's goal is to just make sure Iran doesn't get a weapon while he's president, or that no war starts while he's president, as we've seen with his Hamas strategy and with his Ukraine strategy, and now with Iran, that just means that all of our adversaries have been welcomed back into the international community, into the international economy. They can continue to make money. They can continue to refit, reorganize, rearm for the day after Trump leaves office. And maybe that's what we saw during the Biden administration with everybody taking advantage of this permissive environment. And we may see that again. It's concerning. Anyway, that's my point.
Yeah, fascinating. So what are the factors at play here? Because the U.S. is engaged in supporting, obviously, the war in Ukraine's defense through NATO and, watching closely China's aggression toward Taiwan. There's plenty going on, not to mention Gaza. So what do you think are the factors at play in Trump's approach in these negotiations?
Well, if you're an adversary of the United States, if you're President Putin, You heard Witkoff say that the United States, in order to end this war, would give Putin everything he's taken so far inside of Ukraine, which would be unacceptable to Europe, unacceptable to NATO, and unacceptable to the Ukraine. When it comes to Gaza, that there is no ceasefire right now. The Israelis have to do what they have to do. When it comes to Iran, we have to make sure that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon now, not just pause their efforts. Everything that our adversary is doing, from Putin to Hamas to Iran, are delay tactics. Let's delay. Let's wait out Trump. He's strong. He can be strong. Right now, I don't think the first 100 days have actually shown strength in foreign policy. They have in domestic policy, of course, but not in foreign policy. So our adversaries are taking a wait-and-see attitude, and the playbook is to delay. Everything we're hearing out of Tehran is a delay tactic. Well, let's put an interim nuclear deal in place. Well, that just means you wait out President Trump. And if you look at where Iran is now, everybody's still inside the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, except for the United States. That's called the Iran deal. And they're already operating like it's expired, with no repercussions, no sanctions from Europe, no sanctions from Russia or China. They're at 2030 levels right now. They violated the Iran deal so badly that they're already at 2030 levels. And it is, of course, 2025. So everything the president needs to do now shouldn't be just to keep our adversaries from doing bad things while he's president. It should be to ensure that they're not able to do these things the day he leaves office either.
What do you think it will take, and what do you expect in the next meeting?
Well, there can be zero concessions, right? If you're meeting with Tehran, the first thing you should be saying is, tell your proxy, Hamas, to release all the hostages before we even start talking. That would be my first thing to do if I was in Witkoff's position. Release all the hostages. Tell your proxy, Hamas, to do it. Qatar can't tell Hamas what to do. Qatar just gives them money, and Hamas says, make sure you keep sending the money. Tehran could tell them to release the hostages. So that would be number one. You get that in place before we even talk about a nuclear deal. And the kinetic option is on the table. We will target your nuclear facilities. We will target key leadership, because we've designated the whole regime as a terrorist organization. Those things should be on the table. Instead, you got Witkoff going over there thinking that he can make an economic play with Tehran to open it up to U.S. investment, when China already owns Iran's economy. There is no space for the U.S. to get in. So I think we need to be tough. We have the leverage, and we keep ceding it to our adversaries. It's a $400 billion economy going against a $20 trillion economy, and we're treating it as an equal. We have to stop doing that.
All right, and that's all we have time for, unfortunately. Thank you so much for your time today. Michael Pregent, great to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me make those long answers. Appreciate it.
And next up, President Trump says new tariffs on imported semiconductors will be announced within the week. The move signals that current exemptions for electronics like smartphones and laptops may soon expire. NTD's Daniel Monahan has more as Trump aims to reshape U.S. trade in the tech sector.
President Trump took to Truth Social Sunday to clarify that no tariff exception was announced on Friday. He wrote that electronics such as smartphones and laptops already fall under the existing 20% fentanyl tariffs and will simply be reassigned to a different tariff category. The president says the U.S. cannot let countries like China continue to abuse America on trade, adding that tariffs on semiconductors will be implemented in the not-distant future.
We want to make our chips and semiconductors and other things in our country.
Trump also said there must be some flexibility when it comes to tariffs on popular electronics like iPhones.
You know, you have to show a certain flexibility. Nobody should be so rigid.
Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick discussed semiconductor tariffs speaking on ABC.
Virtually all semiconductors are made now in Taiwan, and they're finished in China. It's important that we reshore them. We need to have these things made in America. We can't be reliant on Southeast Asia for all of the things that operate for us.
Lutnick expressed confidence in President Trump's approach to trade negotiations, saying everyone expects Trump and Chinese Communist leader Xi Jinping to work the trade issues out.
I am completely confident, as is he, that this will be worked out in a positive, thoughtful, and effective way for the United States of America. I mean, Donald Trump has the ball. I want him to have it. He's the right person with it. He knows how to play this game.
U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer said Sunday that President Trump and Communist leader Xi have no plans to speak right now.
Right now, we don't have any plans on that. This issue is truly at the leaders' level. The only reason we're really in this position right now is because China chose to retaliate. So many other countries affirmatively said they did not want to retaliate. We want to negotiate with the Americans, and the Chinese made a different decision.
President Trump says pharmaceuticals are another key sector the U.S. has to take action on.
And we're going to have our drugs made in the United States so that in case of war, in case of whatever, we're not relying on China and various other countries to supply us with drugs, which is not a good idea.
Trump posted on Truth Social Sunday about a golden age of America, supported by upcoming tax and regulation cuts, adding that better jobs are on the way. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
World markets rallied today after President Trump said some electronics won't face the same U.S. import duties as other products. The move gave global tech shares a boost, and Wall Street's main indexes leapt at the open today, with the tech-heavy Nasdaq up over 2%. Tokyo Electron was up 1.4%. South Korea's biggest company, Samsung Electronics, gained 1.8%. Apple shares rose 5.5% in pre-market trading after dropping over 9% over the past 2 weeks. European shares also advanced, but the market relief may be short-lived as President Trump pledged fresh tariffs on imported semiconductors within days. That's part of his push to shift manufacturing away from China. Taiwan said today its first phase of tariff talks with the United States went smoothly. President Lai Ching-te says they hope to promote a new Taiwan plus the United States layout for trade. Lai has pledged to seek a zero tariff regimen with the United States and to invest and buy more from the country. South Korea's acting president, Han Duck-soo, said today that President Trump seemed to have called for immediate tariff talks with South Korea, Japan, and India. Han also said he expected there to be a video meeting between the U.S. and South Korean officials on the proposed Alaska LNG project soon. Meanwhile, Thailand's finance and commerce ministers will lead a delegation to the United States to meet Trump administration officials. The Thai delegation expects to meet with government representatives next week. Thailand is facing a 36% tariff under recent trade measures. It hopes to use a 90-day pause on the levies to prepare a response. The White House says U.S. and European Union negotiators are making big progress in tariff discussions. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett said the outcome will be very good for American workers, especially American auto workers. In an interview today with Fox Business, Hassett said there have been a lot of discussions with the EU. The White House advisor also touched on China. He said the communist nation's decision to stop exports of some rare earth minerals was concerning. Rare earths are critical ingredients for technology and electronic manufacturing. Here's Hassett talking about tariffs and national security.
In the 232 action, the courts upheld over and over the U.S.'s right to protect America by putting tariff on things that affect national security. And so there isn't any change in anything. It's just a question of what you say, is this affecting national security or not, that there are experts, legal officials, technical experts that decide what is and what isn't. And that's a progress that happens a little bit over time when these actions are announced. But in the end, it's not a question of exemption or not, but covered or not.
The man accused of breaking into the Pennsylvania governor's mansion and setting fire to the home allegedly planned to beat Governor Josh Shapiro with a hammer. The blaze left significant damage and forced Shapiro, his family, and guests to evacuate the building early Sunday.
Reporting a large fire in the dining room, the first floor. They can see fire out the windows. G5, it sounds like you're having fire.
But we do know that this attack was targeted. We don't know the person's specific motive yet. But we do know a few truths. First, this type of violence is not okay.
Shapiro said they were awakened by state troopers pounding on their doors at about 2 a.m. on Sunday. No one was injured. Authorities said Cody Ballmer, hopped over a nearly 7-foot-high iron security fence, eluded officers, and forcibly entered the residence before setting it on fire with Molotov cocktails. Police said the 38-year-old appeared to have carefully planned the attack. He was inside the residence for about a minute before he escaped. President Donald Trump condemned the attack. Ballmer's mother told CBS News that she had reached out to police before the incident. She told the outlet, quote, "So he was mentally ill, went off his meds, and this is what happened." Ballmer faces charges including attempted murder, terrorism, aggravated arson, and aggravated assault. A Wisconsin teenager allegedly killed his parents as part of a plot to assassinate President Trump. That's according to newly unsealed court documents. 17-year-old Nikita Kassap allegedly called for the assassination of the president and overthrow of the U.S. government in written documents and text messages. The alleged killing of his parents appeared to be an effort to attain the financial means and autonomy to carry out his plan. In Wisconsin, the teen faces 9 felony charges, including 2 counts of first-degree murder. Federal investigators are also pursuing charges of presidential assassination, conspiracy, and use of weapons of mass destruction. Police believe the suspect's mother and his stepfather were killed on February 11th. Both were found dead from gunshot wounds more than 2 weeks later. The suspect was located with nearly $30,000 in cash and jewelry and a .357 Magnum revolver. Police found material on his phone related to a satanic group. The Republican-controlled Congress is one step closer to making big changes to the federal government. While the party is united behind a framework, more hurdles lie ahead. NTD's Melina Weiskopf reports.
After overcoming intra-party friction, House and Senate Republicans are united behind plans to cut a minimum of $1.5 trillion from the federal budget.
Over the next 2 weeks, as members are in their districts during Easter, the committees will be working and leadership will be meeting between the House and Senate, working with President Trump on the details to start that process the day we get back so that we can deliver real wins for the American people.
However, it's unclear where the cuts will come from, causing uncertainty for the path ahead. Several vulnerable Republicans have made clear they're watching closely to ensure social safety net programs aren't on the chopping block.
This is all going to be negotiated. I've been very clear. I will not support cuts to eligible beneficiaries on Medicaid.
House Speaker Mike Johnson over the weekend spoke about possible changes to Medicaid.
That we're going to protect Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid for people who are legally beneficiaries of those programs. At the same time, we have to root out fraud, waste, and abuse. We have to eliminate people on, for example, on Medicaid who are not actually eligible to be there. Able-bodied workers, for example.
Democrats, meanwhile, continue to push messaging to voters that Republicans will endanger the program, putting further pressure on moderates in swing voting districts.
And rural hospitals would close under this plan. And that affects not just Medicaid patients, it affects all people who utilize those hospitals.
Although Republicans don't need Democrat votes to pass the new budget, their slim majority in the House leaves no margin for error. Republican Congressman Thomas Massie is opposed to the framework, saying he doesn't think either chamber is really serious about making cuts, saying, quote, "Now they may change spending, reduce spending somewhere and increase spending there, but overall the money spent next year is going to be more than the money spent this year."
I knew all along they would trade the cow for magic beans. Mm-hmm. And these beans are like the rest. They don't sprout.
Lawmakers have left Washington, D.C. for Easter and hope to pass the final budget by the end of spring. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Melina Weiskopf, NTD News.
Former Michigan Congressman Mike Rogers is running for a Senate seat once again. The Republicans' second attempt comes after last year's razor-thin loss to Democrat Alyssa Slotkin. Rogers was born and raised in Livingston County, Michigan. The Army veteran and former FBI agent went on to serve as a state senator in 1994. In 2000, Rogers ran for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. He represented Michigan's 8th District from 2001 to 2015. Democrat Mallory McMorrow has launched her own bid to represent Michigan in the Senate. The state senator hopes to replace retiring Democratic Senator Gary Peters in the upper chamber. The Federal Trade Commission says Facebook parent company Meta bought up rivals Instagram and WhatsApp after its attempts to compete had failed. Today marks the beginning of a high-stakes trial in Washington, D.C., where antitrust regulators seek to deny the acquisitions. The FTC alleges that Meta bought the companies a decade ago to eliminate competition among social media platforms. The commission is looking to compel Meta to restructure or sell parts of its business, including Instagram and WhatsApp. Meta has been making regular overtures to Trump since his election, abolishing content moderation policies that free speech advocates say amounted to censorship. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg has also visited the White House multiple times in recent weeks. The breakup would be a financial hit to Meta, which earns about half of its U.S. advertising revenue from Instagram. Arguments over the legality of a Tufts University student's detention in Louisiana will be heard by a federal judge in Vermont. The 30-year-old Turkish native is in the U.S. on a student visa. She was taken into custody nearly a month ago in Massachusetts. The government accuses her of being, quote, engaged in activities in support of Hamas. Lawyers for the students say their client is being punished for her pro-Palestinian stances. During today's hearing, they'll ask for her release and for her case to be heard in the Vermont District Court because that was the last place she was held before being transferred to Louisiana. According to the student's written declaration, she's had 4 asthma attacks while in custody and has called the facility where she's being held unsafe and unhealthy. An arraignment on new charges against Sean Diddy Combs is scheduled this afternoon in Manhattan. The rap mogul was charged with trafficking and transportation to engage in prostitution earlier this month. Authorities say these actions allegedly took place between 2021 and 2024. Combs is now facing a total of 5 federal charges. He has already pleaded not guilty to charges of racketeering conspiracy and transportation to engage in prostitution related to 3 victims. His trial is scheduled for early May. Also today, Sarah Palin's defamation lawsuit against the New York Times goes on trial again. The trial centers around an editorial the newspaper published in 2017. It erroneously linked a map that Palin's Political Action Committee had posted to a 2011 shooting that injured former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. The Times quickly issued a correction. In 2022, a New York jury ruled against the former Alaska governor and one-time vice presidential candidate. However, the judge said during deliberations that he would have set aside the jury's verdict should it have found for Palin. She appealed, and last year, a federal appeals court ruled Palin will be granted a new trial. Russia says it only strikes military targets. This comes a day after an attack which reportedly killed 34 civilians. What Moscow now says about yesterday's strikes. And it all began with a martial law declaration in December of last year. Today, the criminal trial of former South Korean President Yoon begins. Both of those stories just after this break. I'm Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. Italy says a second round of nuclear talks between the U.S. and Iran will be held in Rome. The two countries say they held positive and constructive talks in Oman on Saturday. They agreed to reconvene this week. Italy's foreign minister says the country received a request from the interested parties and has given a positive response. President Trump yesterday said he met with advisors on Iran and expected a quick decision. Western powers accuse Tehran of seeking nuclear weapons. Iran says its program is for civilian purposes only. According to Iran, the next round of talks will remain indirect, like the ones in Oman on Saturday. Each delegation had its separate room and exchanged messages via Oman's foreign minister. The Middle Eastern country is playing the role of the mediator in the talks between the U.S. and Iran. A hostage ceasefire deal between Israel and the Hamas terror group is being discussed. Over the weekend, Israeli and Hamas negotiators met in Egypt to work on a proposal. A group representing families of the hostages says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told them the government is focused on bringing all the hostages back. Hamas released a statement saying it's interested in proposals that will guarantee an end to the fighting and a prisoner exchange. Russia defends a deadly attack on the Ukrainian city of Sumy. The Sunday attack reportedly killed at least 34 civilians. Moscow now says it only strikes military targets. Russia says its missiles hit a meeting of Ukrainian military officers in Sumy. Russia's defense ministry accuses Ukraine of using civilians as human shields. That's by placing military facilities and holding events in the center of a densely populated city. The Kremlin says Sunday's attack killed more than 60 Ukrainian soldiers. According to Ukraine, the strikes killed 34 civilians and injured over 100 more. The leaders of Britain, Germany, and Italy condemned the attack. President Trump was asked about the strikes on Sunday. He said he was told they made a mistake while describing the attack as a horrible thing. The Kremlin declined to respond to Trump's comments earlier today. The Chinese regime said it has decided to impose visa restrictions on some U.S. personnel who it says have behaved badly on Tibet-related issues. The response came after Washington imposed additional visa restrictions on Chinese officials involved in policies governing access to Tibetan areas. The U.S. has accused the Chinese Communist Party of refusing to give U.S. diplomats, journalists, and other international observers access to Tibet and Tibetan areas of China. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said Tibet-related issues were China's, quote, internal affairs. International human rights groups and Tibetan exiles have long condemned the Chinese communist regime's oppressive rule and egregious human rights abuses in Tibetan areas. Peruvian author Mario Vargas Llosa died yesterday. He's a Nobel Prize winner and a giant of Latin American letters. The writer enchanted readers with his lyrical prose for five decades and nearly became president of his country. Here's the story.
Peruvian writer Mario Vargas Llosa, winner of the 2010 Nobel Prize for Literature and one-time presidential candidate, died on Sunday at age 89. He died in Peru's capital, Lima, surrounded by his family and at peace, his son Alvaro Vargas Llosa, a well-known political commentator, said on X. Llosa was a leading light in the 20th century Latin American literature boom. His works include Aunt Julia and the Scriptwriter, Death in the Andes, and The Feast of the Goat. But early on, he abandoned the socialist ideas that were embraced by many of his peers. His dabbling in politics and conservative views annoyed much of Latin America's leftist intellectual class. Yet in 1990, he ran for president of Peru, saying he wanted to save his country from economic chaos and a Marxist insurgency. After losing the runoff to Alberto Fujimori, he moved to Spain but remained influential in Latin America. He harshly criticized the wave of strident leftist leaders led by then-Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. His work crossed genres and established him as a foundational figure in a generation of writers that led a resurgence in Latin American literature in the 1960s. Peru's President Dina Boluarte hailed Llosa as the most illustrious Peruvian of all time in a post on X. After the news broke, journalists and fans gathered outside Llosa's Lima home.
Obviously, we are saddened by his parting, but we are also aware that we are left with the invaluable work of a writer who has brought a Nobel Prize to Peru, and work that already transcends time. So he has a handful of works that are universal classics, and he is a person who also lived a lot and participated a lot in the cultural, intellectual, and political life of the world.
The United Kingdom passed emergency legislation to take control of a steel factory from its Chinese owners. British Steel was sold to Chinese company Jingye in 2020 after it became insolvent. It's the last factory on British soil that makes steel from scratch. The UK's business secretary said Chinese firms should be excluded from very sensitive industries in the UK. Business Secretary Jonathan Reynolds said China's Jingye Group refused to accept a $654 million government aid package. He said this left the UK government with no alternative but to intervene directly. The closures would have left Britain as the only major economy unable to produce virgin steel. Reynolds said Jingye instead wanted to import virgin steel to Britain from China. He also said previous British governments had been naive to allow Chinese companies to be involved in the steel sector. Former South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol arrived at a Seoul court today for the first hearing of his criminal trial. Yoon's impeachment was upheld on April 4th.
The prosecutors are trying to turn the declaration of martial law to an incitement of insurrection. I believe the proceedings will reveal that there is no concrete evidence to prove the crime itself.
Yoon is standing trial on rebellion charges, which are punishable by death or life in prison. The former president declared martial law in early December of last year, vowing to eradicate what he called anti-state liberals. Yoon accused the group of abusing their legislative majority to obstruct his agenda. He also declared a suspension of legislative activities and sent hundreds of troops to surround the National Assembly. Lawmakers still managed to form a quorum and voted to lift martial law just hours after it was imposed. And stay with us, and we'll bring you more news right after this break.